you learn every race, and if you're not learning, then you probably didn't do it right.
Dizruns Radio, episode 555, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Dizruns Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, one of the things that I offer as a coach that you may or may not be aware of is the consultation call. Meaning, you know, if you don't have a coach, you know, maybe it doesn't fit in the budget, maybe you like to do your own training plan, whatever the case might be. But if you'd like to maybe get an opinion of a coach, talk to one, kind of, you know, explain what your situation is, what, you know, whether it's a training obstacle, whether it's a fitness obstacle, whether it's an injury thing that maybe has cropped up, and, you know, talk to somebody and try to get some opinions, some advice on how to move forward. That's something that we do. That's something that I do. So if you're interested in setting up a consultation call, just head over to dizruns.com/consultation. And it's real easy. You know, you know, there's all the information is right there, obviously right on the website. But basically the process is like three steps. You log into PayPal and you send me a little bit of money. That automatically directs you right to my calendar. And then you just book a time that I'm available. And I give you a call, and we chat it up for about half an hour. It's $20 for a half an hour. Price might be going up to $25 pretty soon, but it's still a pretty good deal. You know, we'll just talk through whatever issue that it is that you're dealing with, and hopefully get you pointed in the right direction so you can keep moving forward. So if that's something that you think might be helpful for you, you know, with spring races kind of coming up quickly, or, you know, as you get into summer training for fall races, things like that, or anything, anytime, just head over to dizruns.com/consultation and we'll get you set up. And we'd really love the opportunity to talk with you and look forward to trying to help you, you know, moving towards whatever running goals that you might have. So with that, let's go ahead and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is one of those runners that pretty much runs all the races from roads to trails, long to short. Doesn't really matter as long as he's out there running. And that's kind of the thing and the tie that binds all of us, right? He's also an ambassador for a number of companies that you are probably familiar with, including Boco Gear, Spy Belt, Soleus, Topo, and Tailwind. And that's actually how we first connected. We were both Tailwind Trailblazers in 2017. I've since been fired, but Aaron's he's still on board and back for another round representing Tailwind. But without any further ado, it's my pleasure to be able to finally, we've been trying to line this up for a while, which you all don't know that, but I do. Finally, welcome Mr. Aaron DeBoard to the show. Thanks for joining us today, Aaron. Really appreciate your time.
I appreciate the invitation. This will be the first podcast I'll be involved with, so bear with me.
All right. Well, we'll keep the kid gloves on and the training wheels and all that good stuff, but we'll have a good time. And guys, if you want to connect with Aaron, find out more about what he's got going on, follow him with some of the races and things that he's doing, at AS DeBoard. That's ASDEBORD. On Twitter, Instagram, social medias, that's the place to connect with them. And you know, as always, everybody's always posting things and race updates and photos and all that good stuff. So follow along with what Aaron's got going on there. And we'll have everything linked up in the show notes, as we always do. For this episode, that's dizruns.com/555. We'll have Aaron's contact information and anything else that makes sense to link to that we happen to talk about today, races, you know, who knows what else. But we'll have it all linked up, and you can check all that stuff out, dizruns.com/555. So, Aaron, the way we always start off the show is with a very simple question that for some folks has a very simple answer. And for some folks, the answer is actually a little bit of a head scratcher and kind of a hummer. And I got to think about it a little bit, but it's just a fun place to start the conversation. And it's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
I did have the opportunity to think about this a little bit, so I appreciate you giving me the heads up. A year ago, had you asked me this question, I probably would have said a half marathon. The reason behind that would be it's a long enough race distance to where you feel like you've accomplished something, but yet the next day, had you trained, had you been prepared for it, you might be able to continue to walk around and live your life normally. Now I think I'm kind of leaning toward, the further races I've participated in, I'm kind of leaning toward more of the 50K or just a little bit further. The longest race I've completed was 100K, but I think I'm leaning toward the 50K race distance, based off the fact that I don't stress out about that race distance anymore. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm trained up enough to not necessarily go out and wing it, but I don't have to worry about overall pace and overall time and all that jazz. I can just go out there, you know, struggle a little bit, cry a little bit, bleed a little bit, and come out on the other side alive. And in you know, I might feel some of the effects of it for the next week or so, or 2 weeks, or however long, depending on elevation and all that. But it's something I can kind of hold on to and say that, you know, this meant something to me. So I do have some, you know, greater plans in the future. But as for right now, I guess the 50K is just kind of one of my more favorite distances. It's barely encroaching on that ultramarathon circuit, but at the same time, it's not something so outlandish. It's going to cost you an entire year of training. And, you know, and then if you potentially DNF it or something like that, you know, you wouldn't have a ton of time invested into it. Mm-hmm. As long as you continue, you know, you don't lose your love for the sport. So.
Right. So as is often the case with this question, you know, in the course of the couple minutes that it takes somebody to answer it, it usually brings up three or four things that I want to, you know, kind of touch back on or you know, places to lead the conversation. And you know, like the fact that you said that about a year ago or so, give or take, plus or minus, you know, more of a half marathon type of distance. And now, you know, kind of graduating into really enjoying the longer things, the 50Ks and in that, you know, kind of, like you said, the beginning phase of Ultra World. What has changed in the last year? Was that when you first dipped your toe into the Ultra World, or why has things changed for you like that?
No, I don't know. I did my first Ultra in 2014, and I tried to play around with, you know, going back and forth and really stacking a lot of races together. Mm-hmm. And so I had, within a 6 month period in 2015, I did, six marathons or greater. Oof. Within 6 months. I look back on that now and those kind of seem like they could have been training runs for something longer, but through a couple different injuries, maybe going a little bit too hard, too fast, I learned that potentially I needed to back off of that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But now that I feel like that I'm doing things smarter, become a smarter runner, become smarter about nutrition. and I think that it's an achievable distance as long as the pace is set for your, you know, your, whatever training you had, you set the pace or the tone for how you're going to perform. And so, you know, my pace has slowed down a little bit. So I feel going into an ultra, I can do it a little bit smarter, a little bit safer. Mm-hmm. And then I stay fueled upright and stay upright.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally does.
If I go off on a tangent, you can pull me back.
Oh, absolutely. But I actually really enjoy when we go off on the tangents, and because it's always, you know, it's the curiosity of all right, well, let's unpack that a little bit farther. And right. You know, with that kind of thought in mind, and something that I've struggled with a little bit as well, I'd love to get your take on it. You know, like you said, with you know, you go a little bit longer, you maybe have a little bit less time pressure, you're a little bit more willing to really, you know, control the pace, not run it at the maximum level. Was that, and it kind of sounds like maybe it was, but I'm still going to ask to get a little clarification. Was that a tough process for you to kind of not quote unquote race everything at the long, or not at least race it to the red line? You know, like you said, you had some injuries in that 6 month period. Was that maybe a struggle along the way?
I think it was. I think that during that time, I was really, it's like the beginner runner mindset, you know, any injury is circumnavigable as long as you don't die or you're not bleeding or it's not broken. So it was an Achilles injury, and I've just kind of dealt with it through to this day. But it's gotten better. I've gone through different therapies and such, but doing that, I had to change kind of my foot strike. I had to change a little bit of the way that I ran, a little bit of the aggressiveness that I would run. So basically backed off all tempo type training runs, and just went out for a time on feet. And kind of, you know, at that point in time, when you went out on race day, you're just there to really enjoy it and take everything in. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm slow by any means. I wouldn't say I was fast by any means, but I hit middle of the pack pretty well. And I think that I've kind of, because of the way that I train now and because of the way that I race now, I think I've kind of curved around getting injured or injured as much as some people would. You know, you learn every race, and if you're not learning, then you probably didn't do it right. But
yeah, I totally agree.
But you learn every race, something new and something about yourself. And I think it just becoming an adult anyway, in this aspect, you learn something, you kind of put it in your toolbox, and, you know, maybe it's good for you later on, or maybe it's good for somebody else. So, talking and, you know, throwing some subjects off on other people and learning from them and learning from their mistakes too, kind of help you along the way. But again, coming back to injury, I think it just made me a little bit more mindful. So.
Gotcha. in something that you said in there, again, as per usual, makes my ears perk up, the antenna start to buzz a little bit, and want to dive back to it. I've been, you know, for your benefit, I think most listeners know about it at this point, but I've been dedicating myself for basically all of 2018. We'll continue for the entirety of the year, of really focusing on heart rate training, doing very minimal, higher intensity training. You know,
like MAF.
Yeah. Really been into the MAF stuff, and you know, follow along with some of the Maffetone stuff, and getting into the science and all that good stuff. So when you mentioned that you kind of backed off the tempos, the harder stuff, focusing on time on feet, how have you noticed, and if so, how has that impacted your overall fitness? Do you feel like it's been a negative? Do you feel like fitness level has stayed the same, gotten better? Like how has that impacted you?
I personally think that, I mean, it definitely doesn't affect everybody this way. I think to maintain speed, you have to have your tempo days. If you're some Olympic type athlete, call it collegiate type athlete, mm-hmm. or somebody who is in the elite category for 5K through marathon or whatnot, you know, you would have to have some high volume, high intensity training. But for us middle of the packers, I kind of go off of perceived effort. Mm-hmm. You know, if I feel like my heart rate's getting, I do wear a heart rate monitor, but if I feel like my heart rate's getting too high, if I feel like I'm out of breath, and then I know how far I'm trying to go, mm-hmm. for that training run, whether it's 2 hours or 18 miles or something of that nature, I'll kind of be able to judge based off of that, you know, I need to either back off a little bit, slow down, because maybe I had a heavy training week that week, or maybe I would have the opportunity to speed up a little bit and try to kind of test my legs. So I maybe now that I feel a little bit more healthy, I might throw in a tempo run in there every now and again. But for the most part, I keep my heart rate between like 135 and 150.
Gotcha. And that's something that I didn't realize until I really started to go kind of down this heart rate training rabbit hole and drinking some of the Kool-Aid and things like that, that even though that's what, you know, the principle is that you're running everything easy, it's still okay to blow the doors off of things once in a while. And I don't know that I really realized that from the outside looking in, but you know, you want to really make sure you're building your base. But like you said, every once in a while, it's okay to go hard. Like that's not going to completely undo everything. The problem is that most runners, you know, kind of stereotypical, I guess, most runners hear that, and then it's just like, oh, well, the more I go hard, the better. And that's where you start to break down and get those problems.
Yeah. And it you ask an ultra runner what the hardest race distance is, and most of them will say about a mile, between a mile and a 5K. and I think it takes more time for people, and they don't realize it takes more time for you to recover from those fast, high intensity workouts. You might be able to go run 25, 30 miles at, you know, I don't know, say conservatively, we'll say an 11-minute pace. Mm-hmm. And then the next day go be a run another 10 miles and get that little ultra stack. But then the next day you go run, you know, a full effort 5K, but that one takes you 4 days to recover from.
Yeah. So. I've experienced that firsthand in the, I guess it's been about 4 months now that I've really been dedicated to the heart rate training thing, at least as we're recording this. I've done, I think, two hard runs. One was a half marathon, a trail half marathon that I did. I mean, off of nothing but 2 months worth of just base work and heart rate work, and mm-hmm. ran it by effort, but ran it hard and actually did a little bit better than I was kind of what the goal was, which was a positive step. And then a few weeks later, after I thought I'd been good and recovered, I did a tempo run, and it was probably the best tempo effort, you know, consistent, hard, really hammering it pretty good for 4 miles. But I'll be darned if I wasn't feeling it for 3 or 4 or 5 days afterwards, which when I used to do tempo runs every week, you know, never felt that sore afterwards. But then looking back at the numbers, I probably wasn't pushing the intensity quite as well as I should have been. I probably was in that kind of gray area because I wasn't recovered. I was fatigued going into it from always doing too hard. So it's been an interesting experiment so far. And it's always a joy for me to talk to folks that have maybe been kind of down that road a little bit in front of me and hear their perspective. It sounds like we're mostly talking about the same thing and seeing some of the same benefits to it as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, every time someone comes up to me, and a new runner, and asks me, you know, how do you run so far? Or how do you do this? And how do you do that? I'm like, well, you know, there is science behind it and the information's out there for you, but people end up going into running and training like it's all magic based. Mm-hmm. And they listen to, you know, some of the elites because that's what they aspire to be.
Right.
But, you know, you can't go couch to 5K elite. You can go couch to 5K, but you definitely aren't going to be up in the front of the pack with everybody. So I, you know, you got to use your resources when it comes to this. And a lot of people haven't put the, invested the time in doing the research on how to train and how to train properly. But then you have to be able to, make sure that fits your schedule and your needs and your goals. So if you don't have a goal of being first place every single time you race, you just want to finish the race, then, you know, sometimes backing off a little bit is going to be better for you. Keep you healthy and keep you around for the longevity of your running desires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully you're goal oriented and you know, you keep setting up those races, so
right.
You always have something to try to accomplish.
Yeah, and I mean, shoot, I would almost argue that even if your goals are to finish at or near the front of the race most time, that backing off once in a while probably isn't going to be the worst thing for you anyway, to try to avoid some injuries and make sure you're building that base as well.
Either that or you're going to be in rehab twice as long as you were training.
Right, and that's a hard way to stay at the front of the pack if you peak and then you're injured and out for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or even longer, and then you're starting basically from ground zero. So yeah, staying healthy is certainly a key component into success. Whatever success means to you, being healthy is a key component to getting there.
Look at elite athletes. You know, he just retired, but Meb, he said at one point in time, you know, if he went out and ran for an hour, he'd be doing rolling and stretching for 2 hours afterwards. Mm-hmm. So. You got to have the time to invest in there if you're in the sport for the longevity.
Yeah, and that's a something that I think it's easy to overlook is you look at that, or you look at any elite or even sub elite, somebody who's you know legitimately is up at the front of the pack in just about every race that they run, and you might look at their workouts and oh man, like you know they hammer you know 8 by 1 mile or whatever it is, just something that's kind of beyond the scope, outlandish, exactly.
Yeah.
But you fail to recognize, or it's easy to fail to recognize, that when that's their full-time job, they can spend 2 hours foam rolling and stretching. They can
absolutely.
They can sleep 10 hours a night, plus take a 2-hour nap every day to allow for the recovery process. And us mortals that have jobs and
must
families
nice,
and things
right?
like that, like we can't do that. So we can't think that we can train the same way when we can't dedicate enough time and effort to the recovery and the strength training and the little things that you know that they can get away with at that level without breaking down every 6 or 8 weeks.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah. It's, you can probably tell I've had that conversation with a few people and preached it to the choir several times and to still get those
Absolutely.
Folks that have to learn the hard way. And it's sad, but it's kind of the way it is.
Yeah. I'd much rather, you know, if I had a 10-mile run planned, I'd much rather run 5 miles and do some stretching, rolling. And, you know, I've recently gotten into some, ART type Grafston technique, on myself, myofascial release type stuff. I'd much rather spend that time, that extra time that I would have spent running that 5 miles recovering. So, you know, I'm ready to go the next day, whether that's for a weight training session or another, run. And, you know, again, like we were talking about before, that might set me up for a tempo run that week. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, had I run 10 miles and maybe my Achilles flared up again, I wouldn't be able to get a tempo run in. So
yeah,
a little bit of give, a little bit of take here or there, whatnot. Just doing stuff smart and listening to your body. I don't think people do that enough.
Oh, I totally agree on that. And I kind of feel like that's one of those things that's a lesson you almost have to learn the hard way. Like you can hear people tell you need to do that kind of stuff, but you know, until you've taken those lumps, sometimes it can be a really tough lesson to learn conceptually until you've experienced it.
Absolutely.
So, shifting gears a little bit, Aaron, how'd you get into running? Is that something that's always been part of your life, or how'd you stumble into the sport?
Well, I'm going to be long winded on this one.
It's quite all right. We got nothing but time, my friend. Nothing but time.
I guess I could be like one of those old Vietnam War vets and just tell you stories. But anyway, so I've been running my whole life, I would say. I started with the short distances. I started running track around sixth grade, and I was a sprinter. I would say I was pretty fast for a white boy, but ran 100, 200, and eventually started running hurdles. Throughout high school, I got a little bit more involved in running hurdles. And I think in high school is where I experienced one of my first minor injuries, but that kind of made a lasting impression on my running career between high school and when I actually started running the longer distances. I tweaked my hamstring a little bit, and it just kind of bugged me for the next 10 or 15 years. I ran track anyway, and I made it to state in my senior year, my junior and senior year. And I thought that I had a really good chance to go to college on some sort of scholarship, or they at least let me walk on. But in the downtime in between applying to school and talking to the track coaches, I started actually tumbling, which was like gymnastics. Mm-hmm. I started doing that in one of our PE courses. And so the cheerleaders saw me and they asked me to come throw them up in the air a couple of times and catch them. And I had no idea what I was doing, but they liked the fact that a guy wanted to do that. And so after I graduated high school, I decided to kind of start pursuing that a little bit more. Got into cheerleading. I was a cheerleader in college, actually coached cheerleading college for a year. And just really after that point, I got into lifting weights and just stayed in the weight room. I mean, I was, for the lack of a better word, a very small meathead. I never broke 200 pounds, but, I'd stay in the gym for 3-4 hours, you know, when I was still in college. And, by the time I left college, you know, I was ready to start my professional career, and my wife and I moved to Atlanta, and we had a little recession in 2009. So we had a little lack of some job opportunities. So we both were working retail at the time. The story has a point.
No worries.
So anyway, we moved from Atlanta back to Virginia, and my wife is from Virginia. And so we moved to Chesapeake, which is near Virginia Beach, the Seven Cities, which has a pretty big running community and some well-organized races. So 2009, I ran my first half marathon. Just that one, I would say that I was based off of, or that one, it was based off of a whim. I just felt like I could do it and wanted to accomplish something. And so, I guess that was kind of my introduction into longer distances, but I took a 5-year break. It took a shoulder injury from doing some CrossFit type workouts to get me really into actually wanting to run longer distances. So I turned 30 and I guess I had my early midlife crisis. And I said on my 30th birthday, I was just going to go out and run as far as I could. And I ended up running 15 miles. I think all I ran on was water. I might have had some bacon earlier on in the day.
Performance had, fuel at its finest.
Exactly. I had some great fat to burn off. And so I felt like at that point in time that maybe a marathon would be a reasonable option. So I think it took me 2 days after running 15 miles to decide I wanted to run a marathon.
Wow.
And I signed up for the Shamrock Marathon, which is in Virginia Beach. Mm-hmm. And it's just a hometown race. It was the same half marathon I ran in 2009. And social media really sparked the running interest as well. Mm. So, you know, as soon as you post something on there with the hashtag, you know, you get a couple hits. And back in the early 2013, I think when Instagram was coming around, everyone was doing the like for like thing. And, I talk about social media a lot. It's become a big part of my life, but, it really made me more invested in running, and it really kind of almost kept me, pushed me anyway to maybe become a little bit more consistent in running. There's a little bit of maybe some FOMO, you know, so you're at work and you see somebody running. So you get off work and it maybe would inspire you to go run. And maybe a little bit of that was, just being jealous of the mere fact that they were out exploring and you know, you had to sit at the desk or whatever. But anyway, point of the story, about 2014 was when I ran my first marathon, and it was the beginning of it all.
It's one of those questions that I love when people take the time to really explain it. And even if it seems like the story's long and winding, it sets a good picture. And really kind of, I think a lot of us can relate to somehow similar like that. With the social media bit, you know, like you said, it's definitely kind of encouraging, or can be at least encouraging, to see what other people are doing and try to keep up. What about the relationships, the kind of the online community? Has that been a big part of your experience as well?
Absolutely. There's a little bit, I think you have kind of like different groups or different mindsets in social media. You have people that really like to be connected and immersive, and they like to develop relationships with other people. And then you have people that just like to get followers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's umpteen dozen different apps you can download now to figure out if people are following you, if they're not following you, or they can send out fake follows and they'll unfollow you the next day or whatever. So, you know, they're just out there to try to gain followers. So companies look at them and say, oh, you're a social media influencer. Yeah, right. There you go. And, and at that point in time, they just want to give them everything for free. And my wife, she's not necessarily a fan of that, because, you know, you get some random people from different places sending you pictures and stuff. But I think that's really helped out. It's really helped out even in the local community, running community. Some people that I probably would have never met, we might have raced together and I might have known their name, but other than that, I would have never had any type of relationship with them. But social media is just that outlet to where you're able to connect with people over a common interest. And, you know, at that point in time, maybe you make an actual new friend because you might go meet them out on the trail for a couple hours. So,
yeah, it's been, you know, it's definitely been a great thing for me, obviously, with the podcast, to find people, to connect with people, to invite them on the show, and you know, be able to actually have a real conversation instead of 140 characters at a time or something like that. But have you had, you know, outside of maybe the local community where it's a little bit easier to, you know, even if you don't know somebody beforehand, you connect with them on social media. Oh yeah, we both live here, we're both running the same race, whatever, and able to connect a little bit more. Have you had opportunities to connect with people that like in person that don't live in your area, that the original connection came from social media at races or when you're traveling or things like that?
Actually, yeah. I don't travel necessarily too much for races, but there was one instance last year where someone said, oh, they signed up for a race specifically because I was running it.
That kind of sounds a little creepy at first.
Yeah, I know, but we had chatted back and forth quite a bit. They were using social media under the guise of a company rather than a personal profile. But they said, yeah, they wanted to come out and they were going to use it as a training run. And since we had had conversations before, they thought that we were kind of on the same page as how we were going to attempt this race. It was a 12-hour race. So, yeah, they came out. We had a great time. We ran together probably 40 miles of the 50 miles we ran that day. And so, yeah, wow. It was a good time.
Yeah, it's something that my wife is getting better at, but she still struggles sometimes with the idea of like, so this person that you've never met before is going to be, you know, like I live about 45 minutes from Disney. So a lot of times it's like, they're going to be at Disney on vacation and they want you to come run with them at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, well, yeah, like, I don't understand why that's a big deal. And she's like, you don't understand why somebody you've never met before, you're going to drive up there at 4 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, and it's always been a good time. You know, we go and knock out 45 minutes and they go on to have vacation with their family and I come home and get on with the day. You know, it's just a cool way to make the world a little bit smaller, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. The last time we were down at Disney, I ran with a buddy down there, and I call him a buddy now because we've met, but we met on social media and we ran the 10-mile Quay Loop out there. So that was a lot of fun.
Gotcha. Well, if you're ever maybe next ever back time in I town, come down, let me know.
I'd have to shoot you a message.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. As with a few instances, happy to head up there and you know, go into the resort at 5 o'clock in the morning. The person's looking you over, like, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, "Oh, dude, just, you know, a buddy's here. We're gonna go
run
some miles together." Yeah, exactly. So shifting gears a little bit again, like I mentioned in the intro, you're ambassador for all of the places, and that was obviously how we originally connected. And I've actually had this question from people before, so it's probably, and I don't think I've ever really talked about it, so maybe it's a good topic to have, or to at least to dive in and see what happens. If nothing happens, whatever, we'll move on. But I don't know exactly the best way to even bring it about, but you know, I've had people ask literally, how do you become an ambassador for different products? And I mean, outside of the simple answer of, well, just, you know, apply, because they all have various application windows. What has been brand ambassadorship, you know, brought for you? I've been with Tailwind last year and I've been with Ultra for several years. You know, you get some product, you get to talk about something that you hopefully believe in and you really enjoy the stuff that you're using. But beyond just the superficial stuff that maybe would make sense across the board of some free stuff in exchange for some promotion, what's it like being an ambassador for, you know, a handful, 5-6 things at various points along, you know, the last several years for you?
Well, for the most part, I would say it's a little overwhelming. I try to be as humble as possible, and I try to not let things like this go to my head to where, you know, some people would say they were jealous or whatnot of being a specific ambassador for a company. But I think as long as you're real with people, maybe just a little bit of mentorship online, you know, there's, again, we're going back to maybe Instagram and saying, you know, if somebody comments on your page, if you just, or on your picture, if you just like it or even don't respond, then you're not really creating relationships with people. And I think a lot of companies like it when you are more interactive. So besides the fact that you can set up a good picture and, you know, maybe it's a great scenery, or maybe it's you running or your friends running or product placement or whatever, I really think it's just becoming more interactive with your followers or other people following, just being very positive. You know, there's there's a lot of people in the running community that are experiencing different things at different times. There are a lot of people that are at different levels. And just because somebody time stamps their picture that they ran 5 miles in 35 minutes, you know, they're going to get 300 likes, whereas somebody that does the same thing with the Nike app or whatever, that ran 5 miles in an hour and a half, they might get 30 likes. Mm-hmm. Because for what reason? You both ran 5 miles. Like, you're accomplishing the same goal. One person ran a little bit faster, but I mean, who cares? Right. So if you're the type of person that, you know, just only follows the elites and you only comment on somebody who just, you know, finish whatever 100-mile race or whatever marathon or whatever you're interested in, you know, you're not going to get necessarily a lot of looks from companies that are trying to invest their time and their money in at a lower level to kind of build from the floor up. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's my perspective on how to become a social media influencer. I really don't even consider myself one, because if you look at how many followers I have, I don't have an outlandish amount. But the ones that I do have, I try to know who they are, know where they came from. If we share common themes, sometimes I've got some followers that follow me because of my dog. Got some followers that follow me because I make kombucha. You know, I've got some followers that follow me because I run. And then some of the other people, obviously, I actually have a personal relationship with, but they have no interest in running at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you just kind of be a little more oblique, but at the same time, a little bit more compassionate, I think that you might get recognized a little bit more. But then at the same time, having a little bit of a comedic side and, you know, going back and forth with people a little bit online without being offensive.
Right.
It's kind of fun sometimes too. So I always try to, as much as possible, think about what I'm going to say first, but go ahead and try to lay out a one-liner or whatever if I can. So,
yeah, I think that, you know, being social in your social media is always important, you know, and really trying to, you know, whether it's to create, you know, those partnerships and ambassadorships, whether it's just to like you said, interact with your followers and get to know people. Maybe, you know, who knows, foster those types of relationships that you do have an opportunity to meet up at a race and you actually look forward to it because this is somebody that's been a friend back and forth for a while. Having that sense of humor and having fun and responding, all that kind of stuff goes a long way towards making social media what I think can be the best of it. And if that leads to some ambassador gigs, like even better.
Right. Yep.
One thing you mentioned there, though, that I'm not going to skip over is setting up a good picture, because that's something that I noticed scrolling through your Instagram, lots of good running shots, and something that, if I'm honest, no matter how many times I've maybe tried to set something like that up, it is a colossal fail every single, like, to the point where I probably don't even really try it anymore. Like, I'm just like, I'll take the post-run selfie as opposed to the during-the-run selfie. So
right.
For those of us, and I am firmly in this category, that would love to maybe figure out how to take a little bit better running shot with the iPhone when you're out there grabbing some miles. What's your process for setting that up? Are there apps that you use for a timer, or how do you get things set up to actually have a decent photo of yourself when you're running?
I can't release all of my secrets, or then I would lose some of my sponsorships,
right, right,
or ambassadorships or whatnot. No, it's pretty simple. You need to have a decent camera. I use my iPhone 7. Earlier versions had, you know, a little bit grainier photos, mm-hmm. but iPhone 7s and greater have 4K. So I actually shoot a video mm-hmm. in 4K, and then I will pause it and scroll through it and see if I have any good shots.
Right.
Taking photography in high school helped out a little bit, knowing angles, lighting, and so forth. But then at the same time, you can't just sprint by your photo and think you're going to get a good picture. You actually have to kind of stage it to where maybe you're you know, doing some strides or something to where it looks like a little bit more impressive. And even when you're injured or whatnot, if you had that, like I had the Achilles injury for a while, I still could get a good picture because at that point, I think I was just jumping off of stuff.
The secrets are coming out. Do you use like a little tripod or something? Do you just kind of find like a tree to lean your phone against or kind of some of both?
It depends on what I'm feeling, you know, right. When I go out there. If I go out for a 10-mile or greater run and I'm carrying a pack or anything like that, maybe I'll carry I just got one of the little tripods, but it broke on me pretty quick into having it. But yeah, it's nice to have a tripod. Otherwise, just setting your phone up. I learned this from a company I was an ambassador for before, but if you shoot everything in landscape, you have a greater chance of capturing something within the frame.
Right.
So yeah, setting your phone up at an angle and then make sure you get, you know, enough sky in it. And if you know anything about photography, rule of thirds, the lighting is huge because especially if you're shooting in video, and it's dark outside, everything's going to end up blurry.
Right.
So I know a lot of people that use the timer, and I've spent too much time during a run trying to get a photo with the timer. So it seems like a waste of time for me. And then I know some people that will shoot, in slow motion, but at the same time, it's about the same. Like if you're shooting in slow motion or in video, it doesn't really matter. You're definitely going to get higher quality pixel, with your pixels and higher definition if you shoot with a timer on. But again, unless you set it up perfectly,
right,
your frame rate's going to be a little off or whatever. So, you know, it's kind of hard to time those. You might get lucky every now and again, but I don't know. I don't think you really should stress over it too much either. Kind of just, if you go out there and shoot two videos, you ran by your phone twice, and you should be able to pick something off of there. And if it's not the most magnificent picture in the world, then you know, it's not the end of the world either. You'll have tomorrow's run to get a better picture.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's if everybody starts to see me posting some running photos, you know that I'm following Aaron's advice. And you know, like you said at the beginning, like it's really not that difficult. You said it's really simple, something along those lines. And I was like, well, yeah, but I mean, I haven't figured it out. And then as soon as you said, just shoot a video and take a still frame of it, I'm like, oh, well, yeah, no kidding. Like, hello. Like that's definitely the easiest. Cause I've tried to do it in the past where I do it the hard way, where it's like, I'll do the burst feature or I'll, you know, try to time it just right so that I can, you know, it's like, forget this. This is way too much work, but yeah, just do a video, run through it a couple of times. And like you said, you're probably going to get at least one frame that looks pretty good.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, at that point in time, you have to decide, okay, is it okay if my eyes are closed and what my half smile looks like I'm drooling or whatever. but then another suggestion too, just to kind of make, you know, if somebody did click on your profile and they were trying to look at you for an ambassadorship, trying to make your pictures a little bit more diverse, don't be running directly at your camera every single time. You know, you might be running across the field, away from the camera, toward the camera, jumping or something like that. You know, just try to have a little bit of variety in there.
What about putting other stuff, like you said, you know, doing kombucha, doing, you know, like I'll have pictures of my wife and my kid, my daughter, you know, maybe the dogs, maybe a quote, stuff like that. Do you think that, you know, from your experience, makes a difference? Does it help? Does it hurt? Does it show that you're a well-rounded person? Where does that come into play if you want to have a running specific profile, good, bad, or indifferent?
Well, based off of what you said, if you want to have a running specific profile, I think it's okay to use if we're talking about Instagram, I think it's okay to use Instagram specifically for running. But then use Instagram stories maybe for more of the things that happen in your life, like brewing kombucha or a picture of your dog or something like that. But again, every now and again, just to show that you are human, and you know, you're not a robot, but right. Throw a picture of your family in there, you know, throw a picture of your dog, or if you had a fantastic meal or something like that, you know, just to kind of bring those people into your world. But don't, and I think this is a generational thing, don't take a picture of everything that happens in your day and post it. I think being a little bit more selective about what you share can kind of make you a little bit more intriguing. I think engaging at least 3 times a week is very important, but at the same time, don't engage 6 times a day. I think Facebook is okay for that, and Twitter may be okay for that, but Instagram, when you are following 20,000 people, or I'm definitely not even anywhere near that, but you know, it might take you 45 minutes to scroll through 5 minutes of uploads. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little crazy sometimes. And I have a tendency sometimes if people aren't posting, if I don't have a relationship with them and I've never engaged with them, if they're not posting anything of substance, I may unfollow them. And I say that very selectively because I try not to do that. But you know, it's just, if it's a ton of quotes, then right. I don't really see that you put any effort into it. And again, that just sounds kind of bizarre to me now that's coming out of my mouth, but that's my thoughts. Like, show me something worth me clicking. And I do, I will like every single picture in my feed, but, you know, post something that's worth it. And if you are trying to get that look from a company, if somebody else quoted it, that's great. And take that quote and use that as your caption rather than taking a screenshot of wiki quotes and then posting that as a picture.
Right. Right. And you know, I don't think that, you ever need to feel bad about unfollowing somebody or, you know, if, because ultimately it's your feed. And if it's not something that you're interested in anymore, maybe the, you know, your phase of life has changed and you're right. No longer interested in a certain topic. And that's what that person, that profile posts about. I mean, we all do it, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, like, you know, if somebody's posting things that you don't care for anymore, it's okay. So, but yeah, I love the idea of you know, just talking a little bit of shop because it's something that, you know, I love engaging on Instagram as well as most people do. But yeah, sometimes it's, you know, how can I make my photos a little bit better? How can I make them stand out from a podcasting perspective, from a, you know, being noticed by other brands or just other people, just by wanting to connect with other people. If you've got good photos, they're more likely to follow you. And then that's where those relationships come from and you can go from there.
Right. Yeah. You end up getting reposts and, you know, then you might get a new follower because the amount of ultra runners, marathon runners, half marathon runners out there is just growing daily, and people are becoming more. Now they're deciding more now that they can tell people, hey, it's okay to post about running. You know, we might have had some closet runners for the last 20 years, but now that's okay to take a picture. Yeah. So you get, you know, your grandpa taking a selfie.
Yeah, definitely. So, as we're getting a little bit closer to wrapping up, Aaron, we've touched on it a couple times and I can't let it go. Cause I'm a kombucha brewer myself.
Awesome.
I've got the jar on the counter right now.
Absolutely.
And I know that you had done a little experiment with, brewing Tailwind, kombucha. How did that go? And what was the inspiration to try that? Cause I'm pretty boring when it comes to my brew. It's you know, straight tea, straight sweet tea. Throw it in there. A couple of days later, you're good to go. But what was it that urged you to try the experiment? And then also, obviously, how did it go?
I've always been kind of someone who just wants to try different mixtures. So I was doing for a little while. I did some, however you pronounce it, none or noon, the little tablets. I did those in seltzer water, and then one time I tried Tailwind in the seltzer water, and then I was like, well, let's see if Tailwind does anything in kombucha. I like kombucha, I like Tailwind, and so I thought about putting the two together. And since you're our brewer, you know that the sugar is what ferments into the alcohol, or in this case, more of the gases. So I was figuring that a stronger ratio of Tailwind to kombucha might work out a little bit better. But in the back of my mind, knowing a little bit about microbiology and chemistry, the salt being a preservative would potentially kind of kill off the SCOBY a little bit. And maybe maybe it would still ferment, maybe it wouldn't, I don't know. So that's kind of where the experiment came into play. And obviously the salt did play a role in it. My second experiment, I had to dilute the Tailwind kombucha mixture and I added more kombucha to it. And then I left that for a couple months, and that sounds kind of crazy to people that don't brew, but time in this case actually paid off. They started growing very small scobies, and which is the actual culture mm-hmm. in the kombucha, and I used the orange flavor, the mandarin orange flavored Tailwind. It actually kind of took on like almost a peachy type taste. Mm. So it is pretty good. I do have bubbles. I still have a couple bottles of them. I've been trying to use them sparingly. I'm calling them my vintage kombucha right now. but yeah, I did a diet last year for a month. I did Whole30 and every night I had a kombucha, and I actually ran a 12-hour race, and I was real scared because I wasn't allowed to have sugar. During that time frame, during that diet, but I did use some Tailwind. But I did notice that the kombucha, I'm saying the kombucha helped me out, but the kombucha really, I guess, helped clean me out to the point mm-hmm. where everything I ate ended up just burning, you know, right. it was fuel. So I, as my friends say, if the fire's hot enough, anything will burn. So my metabolism was spiked up, and you know, I lost 20 pounds that month. Wow. But I would say that the diet helped out a lot, but also drinking kombucha was a new health habit that I was fully committed to. So I go 5 to 7 days a week now with having 1 to 2 bottles every day. So. Mm.
Yeah, I just do the continuous brew. So like my okay. jug has the tap on it, and I just every day pretty much I'll you know, grab a small glass of it, and maybe gotcha. Sometimes a couple times a day I'll grab a small glass and just always add a little more tea, and you take some out, right. you add some more, and it's been good, and definitely, you know, improving that gut health is something that really does make a difference. So mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure we probably lost some people because they don't care about kombucha, but it's a good thing, and like you said, I mean, you can almost you can definitely draw a correlation between how well you do, how well your body is at processing calories to how it you turn out on race day. So having that good gut flora and that healthy, you know, microbiome, we're getting all sciencey here, but it does make a difference. So it's an interesting topic and something that I certainly enjoy, and it's super easy, you know, like you start pricing it out to buy a bottle of kombucha every day. Absolutely. It's super expensive. You buy one scoby that lasts you forever, basically. Yep. And it regenerates, so you can always keep recycling it or passing it off to friends, and you can make it yourself for next to nothing and have a pretty much limitless supply.
Yes, sir.
So I'll get off my kombucha soapbox a little bit, but it's fun to find somebody else that shares the passion and does a little, you know, whenever we talk about homebrewing on here, it usually ends up being beer, and I don't homebrew, but I'll ask those questions, but it, you know, homebrew kombucha, that's right up my alley. But as we're getting here to wrapping up here, Aaron, I typically like to end the conversation with something that I call a philosophical question, which can be, maybe can sound a little bit scary, but it's very similar to the open-ended kind of first question, where it's a simple question. You can answer it short. You can answer it long. You can go however you see fit. Obviously, most times we get, you know, a nice little medium-sized answer, and that's where we'll put a bow on things. But I would just be curious with you and with where you are in these last, you know, handful of years and kind of the evolution and growth of your running career. Why do you still run? What is it about running that just lights you up and gets you wanting to go out there, you know, every day or every couple of days, whatever, you know, the training pattern looks like to get your miles in? Why do you participate in this crazy sport that we all know and love so much?
Well, didn't you open a can of worms? okay, I would be wrong if I didn't say the most vain thing that I think most people would say, but I guess it's not really vain when you look at your health. I do it to try to keep the weight off. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy eating. and so, yeah, I run to keep the weight off, and it scares me now to know that I can still sit here, and I'm heavy for a runner. I weigh 180 pounds. At 5'10", but it scares me to think that if I stopped running, I'd have to change my diet. I really like food. But then at the same time, keeping your race schedule full, be selective, make sure you train, obviously. Mm-hmm. But don't be scared to have those, I'm going to quote someone that a lot of people disliked, but the Reverend Jerry Falwell said to have big, hairy, audacious goals, or BHAGs, and we can all grow from thinking about having something that may not be attainable, some type of goal that just you might have the opportunity to fail. And I don't think we need to be scared of failure, but have some type of goal that, you know, you might not be able to reach. If that for some people is a marathon or a half marathon, or, you know, maybe it's a marathon runner and they have a goal of a 50 miler or a 100 miler, you know, that might be the fire that they need to keep moving. But I think it's a personality thing too. I think some people just have, an addictive personality. And I would be one of those people that, falls into that category. I kind of want to be involved in everything. If something looks cool, I want to do it. And running is definitely something that looks cool, but it also makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. Definitely get a lot of endorphin release. My wife knows when I don't taper a lot because of that, but my wife knows when I'm in my taper and I get the little taper crazy. She tells me, yeah, you need to go outside and do something because... Yeah, you are, you're a little snappy or whatnot, or, you know, being short with her. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think just having that, it's a fear of becoming overweight, a fear of, my mom has MS. So I have a fear of potentially finding out that I have MS or some other. And I have a neurological disorder, but finding out that I have some other type of neurological disorder that potentially could be debilitating, I want to do everything that I can in the time that I'm allowed or allotted to. And at the same time, I want to do the best that I can. But I got to keep myself healthy. So we'll go back to the first topic that we're talking about, keeping ourselves healthy. So anyway, off and on that tangent again. But yeah, I think those are all things. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel good about myself. It gives me a little self-worth. You get kind of caught up in the monotony of life and going to work and coming home. And if you have a dog, walking the dog, if you have kids, taking your kids to here, there, or wherever, and taking care of your house or your property or whatnot. And then you just don't have any, maybe you don't have anything else. And so this kind of gives you something to work for, look forward to, and feel good about. And it's a social thing if you want it to be. It's, it's a time to be kind of cathartic and just go be by yourself and just, you know, maybe have some therapy with yourself. Mm-hmm. Maybe whatever you believe in, you know, you can pray or you can just kind of observe nature or whatnot. And I don't know. It becomes a lifestyle type thing. And I don't want to fall into the category where it's the only thing I talk about, but it's definitely when people bring it up, they know that they're going to get a mouthful. I'm going to give a mouthful. Anyway.
Well, fair enough. And that's why I, told you before we started, don't be afraid to go off on a tangent, tell a story, whatever, because I love it when I can ask a simple question and get more than I bargained for. And that was with the last question delivered and with many of the topics we covered today, you delivered as well. So we'll go ahead and put a bow on it there. But I think we left enough things uncovered that if the opportunity comes to circle back and do this again, we've got plenty of other fodder to talk about. And as runners, we can always just talk about running, like anything about running. There's races. Absolutely. And training and this, that, and the other. There's never a shortage. But guys,
there's so many facets to it now too. So
yeah, which is awesome. So guys, again, if you want to check out Aaron and what he's got going on, Twitter, Instagram, see some of those photos that we talked about that I'm going to start figuring out how to make them too. But AS Debord, DEBORD on the social medias, and disruns.com/ 555 for links to anything that we talked about, and we'll make sure to reference them up there. You can check them out and connect with Aaron as well. So that is that. Aaron, thank you so much for the time today. Certainly do appreciate it, and wish you nothing but the best going forward, and certainly looking forward to staying in touch. And if you want a running partner the next time you're at Disney, just let me know. I'll come up and we'll knock out a few miles together.
Yeah, and if anybody's ever up in the 757, area code 757, 70 cities in Hampton Roads, Virginia, you can shoot me a DM on Instagram or Twitter or whatever. And if you just want a location to run, I'll be more than willing to help you with that. Or if you want a running buddy, just let me know. I just got to make sure that it's okay with the wife.
Fair enough. But thanks again for the time, Aaron, and all the best.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Aaron and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from today's episode. What was something that we talked about today that that made you stop and think a little bit, or made you look at a situation in your running life or in your non-running life a little bit differently? For me, there were a few things, but and I think maybe the photography one is maybe the most obvious, and something that I've already worked to try to implement a little bit, still figuring it out, still playing with it. But I think my biggest takeaway, a little bit more broader sense of the episode, is the willingness to experiment and try some different things and see how things work. You know, be a scientist as it relates to your running. And specifically what brought that to mind was when Aaron and I were talking about brewing kombucha and, you know, using the tailwind as maybe a sugar substitute to flavor up the kombucha, make it a little bit different, something unique, whatever the case might be, and how, you know, the first batch didn't exactly work real well and the second batch worked a bit better. And that's just the process of experimentation, of trying different things, of adjusting, adapting, and continuing to move forward. And I think as runners and you know, quite honestly, probably as humans, that's a valuable trait. That's a valuable thing that we can all, in many cases, learn to improve upon. You know, when you're talking about your training, you know, things might be working okay, but is there a better way? Is there something that you can do that might improve things? You know, maybe it's paying more attention to the little things in addition to your running. So spending more time on the foam roller or on the yoga mat or doing some strength training exercises, things that are ancillary to your running success, but definitely, you know, are things that are, you know, that are very important components of your success as well. You know, we think sometimes that just running is all we need to do. And there's so many other things that help our time pounding the pavement or time on the trails to be more effective. So maybe it's experimenting with some of that type of thing. Maybe it's experimenting with your diet or different supplements or whatever the case might be. I think that sometimes we get comfortable in the status quo, and I'm certainly speaking to myself here. We get comfortable in the status quo and don't want to mess something up, so we're afraid to try. And I understand the idea of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think that's a good sentiment to take in a lot of situations. But just as often, I think it's okay to try to dabble a little bit, to experiment a little bit. And I think that was my big takeaway, is just that it's important to try different things once in a while, because you never know how they might work out for you. And it might just be the missing piece, you know, that I need to get to Boston, or that I need to knock the next, you know, 20 minutes off my marathon time, or whatever it might be. And that might be the difference for you as well, is just that little bit of experimentation to help you keep moving in the right direction. So that was my takeaway. What about you? What stood out to you from this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And you can head over to the show notes if you're so inclined, and leave a comment there and share your takeaway with not only myself, but with the rest of the world at DizRuns.com/555. And as promised, we have everything from the today's episode, all the different brands that Aaron works with, and some races that we mentioned, and various things linked up in the show notes, DizRuns.com/555. So that is where we're going to go ahead and put a bow on things. And don't forget, if you want a little consultation talk, a little bit of help, you know, one-off coaching type of conversation, maybe to help you figure out some area that you might be able to try to tweak and experiment with a little bit and see how that might help you, let me know. DizRuns.com/consultation. I'll take you to the page on the website, and you can get the process started. Like I said, we'll get on the phone. We'll work through whatever issue it is that you've got, whatever question you might have, and try to get you going back on the straight and narrow, moving towards whatever goals that you are working towards. So with that, now we can officially put this episode to bed, cross the hour mark, which we don't do very often, but hopefully that was okay for you. It was a good conversation. I didn't want to cut things off too early. So anyway, we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up now. Thank you again for listening. Certainly appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Appreciate you taking me with you wherever it is that we went today, whether we were running errands, doing work around the house, or whatever. Glad you let me into your earballs, and I really appreciate your time. So until next time, please be well, take good care, and we'll talk soon. See you guys.